This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
He rims it around to the far side, kept in by Trouba. Now for Little, out in front of the shot, they score! Kyle Connor, a three-way passing play, and Connor has the go-ahead goal with 1:14 remaining in the third. It's 4-3, Winnipeg. How about that?
Paul Edmonds with the call from Thursday night. It proves to be the game-winning goal. Kyle Connor sniping it past Sergei Bobrovsky. The Jets with two third-period goals on Thursday night complete the comeback and defeat the Columbus Blue Jackets 4-3. They finish the week 2-1 in their three games ahead of this evening's game against the Anaheim Ducks. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, celebrating 10 years of Illegal Curve Hockey, Illegal Curve Radio. So we'll be with you for the next 3 hours. Looking forward to tonight's Jets-Ducks game, looking back at the Jets week that was, lots of Jets news analysis. We're going to be joined by the Deputy Commissioner of the NHL, Bill Daly, in about an hour's time. And throughout the show, we'll be doing some flashbacks to previous Illegal Curve episodes, a little bit of a clip show with all the new content you've come to know and love.
I have one center. One center.
You're doing your torts?
Got one center.
You're doing your torts?
Yes.
Okay, that's good. I was impressed he didn't, I guess he just sort of brushed over after Thursday night's game the whistle by the officials when Tanev took the block shot into the back of his spine, and then torts, everyone was sort of waiting. He blew up pretty good on the bench when they blew the whistle.
And I was worried for Ezzy. I'm not going to lie to you. I thought that as I said, I tweeted it out. I said, I really hope Ezzy's okay because, you know. And then when Kyle Connor scored with a minute 14 to go in the third period, I thought, oh God, start praying for Ezzy now because it could be a bad night.
Well, you know who was the most upset about this?
Who?
Is Zach Werenski, because if you remember a couple of years back in the playoffs.
Yes, he took it in the face.
Right, and they didn't blow the whistle, and Pittsburgh scored the goal, eventually won the game, won the series. So Werenski was the guy that was really pissed off. But yeah, Torts was not happy on the bench. And after the game, I don't think he was very happy, but he also didn't blow up like we've seen so many times before. So It's always nice to see Torts in Winnipeg. We only see him once a year. So
yeah, I mean, we've talked about the Blue Jackets a lot this year because there's such an interesting dynamic with them being a playoff team, yet two of their best players in Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky are on the trade block, allegedly. So, I mean, they've been a fascinating team to watch from afar. They're a good hockey team. You watch them, you know, they were up 3-2 in that game on Thursday night, playing without Cam Atkinson, who takes a puck to the head during warm-up, and all of a sudden he's a late scratch.
Yeah, 30-plus goal scorer.
Yeah, I mean, this Blue Jackets team has just been surrounded by drama all season long, and they probably deserved a better result than losing in regulation on Thursday night, but this Winnipeg Jets team they're just tenacious in some regards. You saw it on Tuesday night against the Boston Bruins, where they don't appear to have anything going for them, and then boom, in the span of whatever it was, 34 seconds, I believe, Kyle Connor gets two goals, and all of a sudden the Jets have the lead in that game, which they eventually won, of course, in the shootout.
Right, but how many times, guys, have we seen the Jets come back down one goal, two goals? I mean, we saw it really early in the season against the St. Louis Blues, and we saw it on that road trip against the Rangers and the Devils, the games that they won in overtime in the shootout. You mentioned the game against the Bruins. The Jets were not good through the first two periods, and I mentioned this to you, Drew. I thought the Jets were actually better in the game against Philadelphia, a game in which they lost. But I mean, the Jets were still very much in this game. Connor Hellebuck made some huge saves, and I don't think it was talked about enough.
You're talking about the Bruins game right now.
I'm talking about both games.
Okay.
I thought Hellebuck was excellent against the Blue Jackets. And you know, you could say that maybe on Panarin's goal, I was talking to Dave about that up in the press box. I mean, you know, Hellebuck, I think, thought that the puck was going to be cleared, and that's why he was a little bit slow to get off. But when you leave a guy like Artemi Panarin, you know, that when you leave him that much space, and he's got a great shot. So I don't really, you know, fault Hellebuck on Panarin's goal. That was the first goal of the game. So I thought he was really solid from the second period on. But give the Jets a lot of credit. You know, you're in a one-goal situation. You're at home. You're really solid at home. And I thought the Jets could have easily had 5 or 6 goals in that game. You know, I thought the power play was moving really nicely. You know, Paul Maurice is trying some new looks on the power play. We know that Buff is coming back eventually, but you know, I thought Patrick Laine had one of his best games in a while. You know, had a couple of shots on net, looked really good on the power play. But watching that Blue Jackets team, and I want to get Dave in here, a few things stand out to me. Sergei Bobrovsky does not look like a confident goaltender
no,
to me.
I'm surprised they went. I mean, we had Aaron Portsland on the Wednesday show, and we said, you know, who do you expect to be the goaltender? And he thought it would be Korpisalo.
Right.
I was surprised that they didn't, that they went with Bobrovsky. I mean, you saw, which goal was it? The Mason Appleton goal that he basically
second goal.
Throws it into his own net himself? Yeah. I mean, you look at the replay.
It just
there.
Trickled by him.
Yeah.
He had it.
He had it, and he just sort of doesn't secure it, and it just trickles behind him almost for the second straight game, where because he had a very similar goal against the Buffalo Sabres on Tuesday night.
It was the way he was handling the puck. It was his rebound control, Dave, and the way he was handling the puck. He just didn't look like a former Vezina winner. And the other thing that stood out to me about the Blue Jackets team is just how good Seth Jones is. I told Dave this. I mean, I think Seth Jones is going to win a Norris Trophy one day. He's such a good defenseman, and they've got a few other good defensemen there as well. Ryan Murray's a good defenseman, and Zach Werenski, you know, a former Calder Trophy finalist. So this Columbus team, guys, has pieces, and they played, I think, a good 40 minutes against the Jets, but the third period, it was all Jets, and that's all it takes when you're against a skilled team like the Jets. You know, they pop in a couple of goals, win the game, but Columbus is still going to be a playoff team, I think. I just don't know, with everything that's going around, all the balls in the air with Panarin and Bobrovsky and their future, I just don't know if they're going to be able to go anywhere in the playoffs.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair, especially with you see like Pittsburgh making a move to tool up, and you've got Washington's defending Stanley Cup champion. If I'm Columbus with that sort of uncertainty, and we've talked to folks in Columbus before, we've had them on the show talking about the depth of the goaltending situation. So, you know, you maybe you're thinking to yourself, you know, we can trade a Bobrovsky. Now, of course, conversely, and we've talked about this, maybe it was last week's show or the week before, but it's how many contenders are truly looking for a goaltender? Because if you're a contender at this point, do you really need to add a goaltender? Because that's a fairly significant add. Now, I mean, again, perhaps if that's your weakness, you know, maybe that's something you do, Colorado Avalanche. But at the same time, it's interesting to me that if you're a team like Columbus, what are you? Are you a team that thinks that you're going to challenge for the Stanley Cup? I mean, Tortorella was like downright livid. I mean, his pregame comments, and we usually don't really focus on the opposing coach and their pregame comments, but his comments, I mean, he basically called out his team, and it was a good move because the reality is it's twofold, right? If they don't show up, well, then he's right.
Yeah.
And if they beat the Jets, well, they beat the first place team in the Central, and he motivated them by his words, kind of throwing them out in throwing them under the bus, I guess. But at the same time, it was an interesting thing from Coach Tortorella, who, while he's a passionate guy, I suspect he's a little calculated as well. And so
I think it had a lot more impact. You mentioned the calculated part. Had he made those comments after the game on Tuesday against Buffalo, where they lost, then by the time Thursday rolls around, they're almost under the bridge. They're almost forgotten about because he's passionate. He's fired up in the heat of the moment of the loss. Instead, he says it on Thursday after it seems like he's been stewing on the words for the last 48 hours or so, and it has more of an impact to get his team charged up to hit the ice against the Jets that evening, as opposed to do it sort of in the immediacy of the next game, as opposed to the aftermath of the previous game.
Right, and you're talking about the circumstances of this game. Right, you've lost three games in a row. Right, you have no Cam Atkinson, you have no Boone Jenner. Boone Jenner is going to be out for 3 or 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. Right, you've lost these games, but you've lost games at a crucial time in which you can make up some points and some ground in that division. Right,
they're now in the last playoff spot in the Eastern Conference.
Right, so you win two of these four games, Drew, and you're in a much better position. Right, you're trying to separate yourself from the wild card teams, not become a wild card team. Right, so the circumstances surrounding this game between the Jets and the Blue Jackets, I mean, it was just everything was set up for Torts to go off pre-game, and he didn't go off post-game, but he obviously didn't want to talk a lot about the winning goal, because many people think that he was calling out a guy like Alex Wenberg, who's had a horrible year. He's had one goal all year, or a guy like Oliver Bjorkstrand, who actually scored a goal, but he's also not had a good year. I think he's only got 8 goals, but they expected much more out of him, right? So who scores a goal that line? Bjorkstrand, Wenberg, and Nick Foligno, obviously one of their veterans. And then who's on the ice, though, for the winning goal? It's that same line.
you know, the winning goal, it's a case of line A goes off, and I mean, it's always the trailer on the play who comes in, and that's what Connor is. Nobody marks the trailer. Connor comes in off of the Jets bench with an absolute head of steam. It's hard to pick up that guy because you're not anticipating the player coming off the bench necessarily jumping in, or in the heat of the moment, you're not focused on that. Instead, what does he do? He finds some soft ice in the middle. He takes a pass. It's on and off his stick like a rocket, and boom. The Jets take that 4-3 lead. I mean, if you're Tortorella, especially after the Tanev whistle, where Tanev blocks the shot, doesn't have his stick, I mean, I understand why he's furious in that situation. I understand why the ref blows it dead, because you think watching Tanev in that instance, if maybe you're not as familiar with how Tanev looks and how he plays the game, you think that guy took the puck in the face and he's bleeding all over the place.
I didn't think he took it in the face, because it took him in the numbers.
Well, I mean, you know, watching on the broadcast, though, it looked like it was hard to tell immediately you know, where he took it. Yeah. You know, a guy took the puck off his body and it looks dangerous, and he's writhing on the ground and he looks to be in pain.
I mean,
I'm sure Brandon Tanev was in pain, but we also know how he bounces back from that so quickly, and Tortorella's got to be sitting there saying, why are you giving them the advantage?
Like, is Tanev the Tasmanian devil, or is he Wile E. Coyote? Like,
well, you've been tweeting both, really, lately, so you need to decide
on
that. But,
like, the reason why I say Wile E. Coyote is because, you know, you can kill Wile E. Coyote, and then he just keeps coming back. Right? Like, Brandon Tanev just keeps coming back and back and back.
I'd be more inclined to call him the bionic one, because I'm pretty sure he's made of, like, robot parts, and that's why he doesn't feel the pain. Now, but to your point, Drew, I actually said to Ez when we were watching, I was like, I don't know why they just blew the whistle, because the Jets didn't have possession of the puck.
No.
And I mean, again, yeah, it looks bad, but I mean, I don't know. I can understand why Tortorella was furious with that, because you'd think that they would have at least given a second or two to see Tanev's reaction. And, you know, Tanev's smart enough. He's played it long enough that maybe he knows the situation he's in, and he stays down, writhing in pain a little bit longer. And again, I'm not diminishing what he did, the shot in the back. That's obviously quite painful.
Yeah.
But, I mean, let's put it this way. I mean, especially if you're Tortorella, to see Tanev walk down the tunnel and then 10 seconds later come back onto the bench, I mean, it's got to drive you a little crazy, to your point that they would have had quite the advantage on the Jets there.
And it goes back to what I was saying before, right, Dave? It's because of the history with Columbus and the block shot.
Right.
By the way, it was Phil Kessel that took the shot.
That hit yeah, Werenski.
Back in the 2016-17 playoffs.
I remember.
And they didn't blow the whistle.
Yeah.
And then you saw the black eye after and all
well,
that.
Well, his so face I think was, I mean, he was out for the rest of the playoffs.
Columbus
after that
has reason to be upset about that. Now, the game's over. The play was whistled dead. Jets won the game.
Mm-hmm.
You can't dwell on it, but
even
though we're in Winnipeg and we cover the Jets, you have to give, you know, Columbus, you know, a little bit of credit here.
That they deserved at least a point in that game. I mean, you know, they didn't get it,
yep,
but they deserved at least a point for the way they played.
I would agree with that.
I mean,
yep.
And then, you know, the circumstances be what they are.
Yep.
Connor comes off the bench. The Jets get that late. They get the late power play goal. I mean,
yep.
I don't love Sergei Bobrovsky's positioning on that goal. I know
he's Roslovic goal?
On the Roslovic goal.
Yeah, he kind of double clutched on the
Roslovic. He thought like it's a one-timer off his stick.
Yeah.
Like, how far over was Bobrovsky that he wasn't able to get back? Because it wasn't like it was on and off Roslovic's stick like lightning. It was quick.
Yeah.
But an NHL goaltender should be able to move crease, you know, side to side faster than I think Bobrovsky did in that instance.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting the contributions the Jets are getting now from that fourth line and from some of their role players.
The second power play units are keeping the power play afloat as of late.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, no discredit to Josh Morrissey, who's very good, but Dustin, you can see the absence of Dustin Byfuglien, how much they miss having him on the power play, how effective he is, how much, like, he's just so fast at getting that pass across to anyone that it really is maybe that fraction of a second more that the Jets need. But, I you see guys like Mason Appleton and Jack Roslovic contributing, and for the Jets, that's something you need, because we've talked about it on the show. You can't just be a one-trick pony in the NHL and hope to have success. You need more than one line to be going. And so for the Jets, if the second line right now is struggling, and the first line obviously is not, but if you're getting contributions from that fourth line and from the third line, well, that's probably a very good thing for your thing down the road.
And Dave, for the power play, it looks like Buff is going to be back soon. It might be as early as the game Tuesday against San Jose,
yeah,
right?
I would guess it'd probably be the first road game in Montreal, but I mean, that's just a guess.
Right, and the other thing I was going to mention, guys, about that Blue Jackets team on Thursday night, I can see why this team is ranked 27th with their power play. I mean, that power play, I realize Cam Atkinson was out.
Too stationary. It was like, you know,
just awful.
From point A to point B with no speed. No players are standing still. It's
aside
an easy
from
power
Panarin,
play to defend.
It's basically you have to defend against Panarin's shot.
Yeah,
that's it.
Well, and that's why they hired Marty St. Louis to come on board as a coaching consultant, really dedicated to the power play, because the power play is very predictable for the Columbus Blue Jackets. It wasn't so predictable for the Jets. Roslovic tied it. Kyle Connor won it for the Jets on Thursday night. As we head into break, as I mentioned, it is 10 years of Illegal Curve Radio. We're celebrating that today. This is what the show sounded like when we debuted 10 years ago. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan, Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
Welcome to the inaugural LegalCurve.com radio show. I'm your host, Drew. I'm joined in studio tonight by my usual band of co-conspirators. To the left of me, I have Richard Pollock. Richard, say good evening to the nice people.
Good evening, everybody.
To the right of me, Ezra Ginsberg. Ezzy, say good evening to the nice people.
Hello, everybody. Hello, Red River audience. Let's go. This is awesome.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Back for Myers at the hash on the far side. Walks off the wall. Crosses past Roslovic. A shot. He scores! The hometown boy comes through. It's a power play goal for Jack Roslovic against the Columbus Blue Jackets. And we are tied at three.
Jack Roslovic's tying goal from Thursday night. From Columbus, Ohio, he hurts the Columbus Blue Jackets. The Jets, of course, went on to win that game. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, celebrating 10 years of Illegal Curve Radio this morning as part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets Game Day. The Jets and the Anaheim Ducks, 6 p.m. puck drop tonight. You can hear that game, of course, here on TSN Radio 1290.
Shout out to your wife, Laura, for making that fantastic cake, by the way. I'm hoping that we're going to get to bite into that pretty soon.
We will get into the cake very soon. There's, of course, as I mentioned, celebrating our anniversary. So yep. My wife has slaved over a hot stove or a hot oven, making a beautiful Illegal Curve cake. It's on our Instagram, illegalcurve.com/Instagram. Maybe we'll send out a tweet of it as well.
I did already.
You did? Okay,
yeah,
there you go. It's on our Twitter feed, at Illegal Curve. Want to hear from you on Twitter as well. Send us any of your comments about the Jets. Send if you have any Illegal Curve memories you want to bring up on air or send to us to bring up on air. You can send them to us at Illegal Curve. We'll get to them throughout of the show.
We're also doing jeers today, Drew, so we're doing some they can send us jeers if they don't like it.
That's right, we're doing cheers and jeers. We haven't done that in a while. It used to be a staple of the program. We're going old school on this Saturday morning edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Lots of trade talk. There was another big deal in the NHL yesterday. We'll get to that later on in hours number 2 and 3 with Derek Brassard being traded to the Florida Panthers. And like I said, we'll talk about that. But an interesting article in today's Winnipeg Free Press from, I think, both Jason Bell and Mike McIntyre have the byline on that, saying the Jets are really basically putting Nick Patan, he is available for teams that are interested in him. They've been receiving calls about Nick Patan as the Jets are looking to trade him, as he's obviously just doesn't seem to have a role on this team anymore, as he's been a healthy scratch for the majority of the season. And in addition to Nick Patan, the Jets are receiving calls about Jack Roslovic. Now, the Jets obviously a lot more hesitant to deal Jack Roslovic. That would be part of a bigger trade if it was to come to fruition. So let's talk about the Patan, and let's talk about Roslovic and any other untouchables on the Jets roster. What is Nick Patan's value at this point in time? I mean, NHL teams have a body of work to look at, not a significant body of work this season at least. But what, you know, as part of a package with maybe a first-round pick, does Nick Patan still have value on the trade market?
Yeah, he does. And, you know, he's only played 13 games this year. He's played just over 100 games in his career. And, you know, he obviously can't get into the lineup right now with Mason Appleton and Brendan Lemieux playing so well on the fourth line, right? And I remember before the season started, we were doing the show at Bell MTS Iceplex, and we had Pauly and Dennis on, and, you know, we were talking about, you know, that fourth line and who was maybe going to take that 12th forward spot, right? And we all mentioned Nick Patan, but we also threw in Brendan Lemieux and, at the time, Christian Vesalainen, right? And, you know, Mason Appleton, guys, has been one of the greatest stories for the Jets this year, I think, along with Lauren Brossoit in the backup role. And, you know, he has trade value in the sense that he's a former second-round pick. He's a guy that's put up decent numbers, point per game numbers last year, Dave, at the American Hockey League level. You know, he's only, what, 23, 24 years old. So, I mean, he's a guy that has, I think, a future in the NHL. And you wonder if, you know, a team like Vancouver, you know, him being from BC, having played for the Portland Winterhawks, maybe you can make a trade with Vancouver or a team that is young, that has a spot for him right now and going forward, right? And I'm not suggesting that there's a trade imminent between the Jets or the Canucks, but the Canucks make a lot of sense for me for a guy like Nick Petan, and obviously, you know, he'd be close to friends and family. But the point is, I think there is going to be interest, guys, and I think that's why you haven't seen the Jets place him on waivers. I strongly think if Petan was on waivers, he would be claimed. He's a talented hockey player. So if you're talking about, you know, packaging Nick Petan up with your first-round pick, Drew, which is going to be a late first-round pick, I mean, is that enough to get you a guy like Matt Duchene?
I think that maybe. Well, I mean, last year the Jets got Paul Stastny for Eric Foley and a first-round pick.
Who, by the way, is done for the season.
Right.
He's had the Blues announced
yesterday. Concussion issues?
He had a concussion in the Young Stars tournament in Michigan, and he's done for the season.
And, Dave, as far as Jack Roslovic goes, I mean, the way Roslovic has played as of late, going up to the second line, playing with Brian Little and Patrick Laine, you know, we talked about he scored the big goal on the second power play unit. Mm-hmm. I don't think the Jets have any interest in trading Roslovic.
I think the interesting thing is it's what do you do? You're in a predicament because, I mean, I agree with you. I think the idea of trading Roslovic and Mike and Jason both wrote to that effect saying that the you know, Cheveldayoff is putting the stop on that talk anyways. But, you know, it's a very interesting, do you go for it? Because this is a team that, you know, we talked about last year, has the ability to win a Stanley Cup. They could have last year not very easily, but they could have been in the dance at least. So, you know, you have to weigh the pros and cons. You know, are you in go for it mode right now, to which you are going to have to give up a reasonable asset to kind of get you over that hump so you can kind of have that edge over a Nashville or a Calgary or a San Jose or a Vegas even? Or do you continue with that slow and steady, you know, build towards something and hope that a guy like Jack Roslovic eventually becomes a Brian Little for your team for the next 10 to 15 years? And you know, to me, from a Jets perspective, giving up guys like Roslovic and Connor, you know, not that you're going to give up Kyle Connor, but that idea that you're giving up guys that you've developed, it's very tough for me to see it. But an ancillary piece like a Nick Petan is more reasonable, obviously.
Unless, from my perspective, Jack Roslovic is untouchable. Unless the Jets are getting back a player who's already established himself in the NHL and has a minimum of 3 years of team control still available to
the
Jets.
But
I'm not sure, you know, who that player is that's returning. So I would be absolutely blown away to see Jack Roslovic included in any trade whatsoever.
There's one trade, I think. If you're getting Artemi Panarin back, if it's Jack Roslovic and a first rounder, I would do that for Panarin. I don't think that's going to happen.
You would do that for a pure rental?
I don't know. That's a tough one
for
the Jets.
For Artemi Panarin.
Rental? I mean, I for a guy
who... Well, who else is there then?
Well, I don't think there is anybody. That's my point. For a guy who, you know, if he continues on the upward trajectory that he's shown throughout his entire career, a former first-round pick, a guy who can be a key member of your team for the next...
No, Drew, the Jets are not trading Roslovic. I mean, I don't know why we're still talking about that because... It's more so Nick Petan. And by the way, I don't think that Nick Petan... I would like to personally see Nick Petan stay on the Jets.
Well, but I mean, ship has sailed, though. I mean, let's be honest. He's not...
Well, he's still on the Jets.
I know he's still on the Jets, but it's clear that, you know, there's no role for him. There's no role for him going forward on this team.
What's wrong with having him as your 13th forward?
Well, he's not going to want to be here much longer. So you might as well get him for, you know, get him as a... Get an asset for him who might be able to contribute to your team.
No, I get that. I'm just saying... I would have no problem with the Jets hanging on to him. I don't think that's going to happen either, but that's what I would personally like to see for him to get a chance to play with the Jets. Going forward, I agree. I mean, it looks like there isn't a future for Petan just because there are other players ahead of him right now, right? You're talking about Mason Appleton. You're talking about Jack Roslovic. Christian Vesalainen, guys, is going to play for the Jets next year, and that's another player we haven't talked a lot about. I mean, is he untouchable? You'd think he's untouchable because he was a first-round pick in 2017. It's going to come down to, like... What would you give up, guys, for Derek Brassard? Would you give up Nick Petan and a late first rounder for Brassard? I think that's too much.
I wouldn't give up much. I don't think Brassard's necessary for this Jets team, to be honest with you. I don't think he's much of an upgrade.
Right. So I'm saying that for me,
I would
right
give
now,
up for whatever the Jets position they determine. You know, for the Paul Stastny equivalent.
Who, by the way, which Derek Brassard is clearly not.
Well, right. But, I mean,
I agree with you, by the way, Dave. I like Little over Brassard.
Yeah.
Nick Petan and a first-round pick for a pure rental makes sense to me at the deadline.
Yeah, I mean, no, that's fine. Yeah, because the reality is you've got guys like, look, Marco Dano, I know nobody talks about Marco Dano anymore. He's having a pretty good season right now with the Moose. He's not scoring a ton, but the reality is that Marco Dano, Logan Shaw, those are guys who can sit as your 13th forward.
Yep.
And you're not going to really, and they can jump into the lineup if they need to, and they're not going to kill you.
And there's a good chance that the Jets are going to have, they're going to go with the two defensemen, one forward, right?
Yeah, like
you have Kulikov, Morrow, or you have Tucker Poolman, Morrow.
You're talking about your healthy scratches?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
okay.
Two defensemen, one forward.
Yeah,
so I agree with Dave.
The rosters expand
Marco,
after the trade
Marco Dano
anyways.
Is always there to be your 13th forward, right?
So. Yeah, I mean, I just don't see any way that Jack Roslovic is one of those guys who ever gets traded by the Jets.
I think all we know is that guys were calling on on Jack Roslovic.
Sure.
And sure, you'd be crazy as a GM not to make a phone call and try and get a player like that who's young and dynamic. But at the same time, that's all it is noise.
Exactly. It's nice to be able to talk about the Jets in terms of on ice. Let's take you back to another classic Illegal Curve clip. This is from May 31st, 2011. That was, of course, the day that the Jets were announced as officially coming back to Winnipeg. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our 10-year anniversary as part of Birchwood Nissan Infinity. Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
Welcome back on Fab 94.3, a special presentation of Sports Radio 1290, live on Fab 94.3. This is a special edition of the Hustler and Lawless Show featuring the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I am Drew Mindell, host of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. My father, Sheldon Mindell, has made a special appearance here, so you know it's got to be a big day if my father is willing to be seen in public with me. joined around the table by Ezra Ginsberg, Rich Hollick, Michael Remus is on air and operating the R-Desk at www.illegalcurve.com. At Illegal Curve is on Twitter if you want to reach him there. It's an exciting day here. Oh, he looks like he's coming on air. Sheldon Mindell, man about town of Winnipeg. How are you feeling? You were a season ticket holder with the Winnipeg Jets for a number of years.
I sure was. I think that's how you got your first involved in hockey.
Yes, I think your wife said she didn't want to spend enough time with you at the game, so that's how you ended up taking me instead.
Well, and this is the result.
And this is the result, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So are you ponying up? Are you going to dig in deep and try and buy a season ticket on Saturday afternoon?
I can tell you that Rumors Comedy Club is planning to be the first corporate supporter. We're going to buy a couple of season tickets.
Well, isn't that fabulous? Already on board. You're going to go knock on the doors next door at the MTS Center, see if they'll take your money already.
Well, no, I'm sure we don't want to jump in front of anybody else. We hope that there'll be two seats for Rumors Comedy Club, and we'll be pleased to make the long-term commitment. Winnipeggers have made a long-term commitment to us, and we're prepared to make a long-term commitment back to them.
Isn't that nice? The corporate community giving back to one another. A wonderful experience shared by my father, Sheldon Mindell. We're joined. We're live at Tavern United. It is filling up really quickly here. It's a great atmosphere. Everywhere you look is Winnipeg Jets jerseys. Dad, thank you. We'll see you later.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
A pleasure. You came live on air this time, so we didn't have to yell at you to turn your radio down.
Drew, Sheldon, before you go,
yeah.
I wanted to ask you how you think Drew's done so far, because, I mean, Drew's been on the air now for 8 hours.
Every time my son makes me proud all the time. His voice sounds like it's going.
No, I'm going strong.
He's going strong?
Yeah, no worries.
And it was interesting. I hear he's got a fiance.
Yeah. Good line, Dad.
Last to know. Okay.
Yeah, good line.
Last to know.
Thanks for joining us, Dad.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290 as part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets game day. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Winnipeg Sun, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Ted Wyman. Ted, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, fellas. It's quite the honor to be here for your 10th anniversary show. Congratulations, guys.
Thank you, Ted. Appreciate those kind words. Where we wouldn't have believed that we would have made it 10 years either. So it is a nice milestone to have achieved. The Jets, Ted, obviously you were on the road trip in Philadelphia and Boston earlier in the week. You were there on Monday night in Philly where the Jets were lethargic at best. You were there on Tuesday night in Boston where the Jets made a comeback, an impressive comeback to end up defeating the Bruins in the shootout. You know, what did you notice different, say, between the Monday game and the Tuesday game and maybe leading into the Thursday game? Was that just a team that sort of found their legs maybe late in that third period on Tuesday night in Boston and then have sort of kept it going now?
I think about midway through the second period, you could see that their legs weren't mush anymore. And, you know, people kind of on Twitter sometimes will say, well, there's no excuse for coming out of the break and not being ready. But I don't know if it works that way. You know, you come out of that and they skated once. They had a practice. They had a game day skate. And, of course, Wheeler and Shifley weren't even there for the practice and had traveled across the country. And you just, you know, I don't think it is an excuse. I think it's just a fact that it's hard to get those legs going when you come out of the break. I think every team experiences. Interestingly, Boston didn't. Boston looked really good right out of the gate. But then when the Jets actually got their legs going, when they finally started to work for them, you could tell that they were much better matched with the Bruins. They were very fortunate that Connor Hellebuyck made as many saves as he did in the first period of that game, or it would have been a completely different story.
You know, Ted, Thursday night, Kyle Connor gets the game-winning goal, and absolutely no one was surprised because, of course, he got the game-winning goal against the Bruins as well. Two games in a row, he's up to 21 goals on the year. When you look at, you know, his next payday, is it possible that Kyle Connor might actually make more than Line A next year?
Well, that's an interesting question. I had the same discussion with Kevin O yesterday, and I, you know, it's hard to. Well, I mean, if you're his agent, what are you going to say? You're going to want the most you can possibly get, and you're going to have a guy that's had pretty close to 230 goal seasons, or he might have 230 goal seasons. He's on pace for that. In his first two full years in the NHL, and he's playing a pretty well-rounded game. He's an excellent forechecker. He fits very, very well on your top line with Wheeler and Shifley. Plays on the power play. Does a lot of things very well. Now, Patrick Laine does a lot of those things as well in terms of being on the power play and being an elite goal scorer, something that you just don't see very often. And I think that you do have to pay for that because there's not a lot of guys who can shoot the puck like him in hockey. But if you're looking at if you're the agent in this situation, I'm sure you're looking at a pretty similar payday for Kyle Connor as to whatever Patrick Laine is going to get.
Well, Teddy, speaking of agents, we've heard from a few of them this week, and Nick Petan's agent was talking about him moving on from this organization. So, two-parter. Number one, how likely is it that Nick Petan is still a member of the Winnipeg Jets after trade deadline passes? And secondly, how significant a move do you think Kevin Cheveldayoff and his staff are going to make this season? Do you think we see another Paul Stastny type move by the Jets, or do you think they made something, a minor tweak, just to kind of augment what they've already got?
Well, first off, for his sake, let's hope that Nick Petan moves on and gets a chance to play somewhere else. You know, he's put his time in here, and he's been the extra forward most of the time this season. Can't be a lot of fun for him sitting in the press box. I think he needs a change of scenery. He needs a chance to play somewhere else. So, yeah, I think that they move him, but he's not much of a bargaining chip, guys. Like, you know, it's not like you're dangling Nick Petan, who's on a one-year contract, you know, when I believe an RFA at the end of the season, for, you know, a top-line center. It's just not going to work that way. Nick Petan right now is a spare part, and that's, you know, you can't get a ton for that, but they can certainly include him in a package and make something work. And the whole, you know, if there's a taker out there that's interested, they can get something back that can be useful for them here and now. So, yeah, I think they're going to try to move him. But, again, if you're even setting your sights on some, you know, if you're setting your sights at all on players like Matt Duchene or Mark Stone, I can't even imagine Artemi Panarin. But, you know, the name is out there. And then Kevin Hayes as well from the New York Rangers, it's going to cost you a fair bit. And that's why on TSN's trade bait list that I noticed just this morning has been updated, Jack Roslovic is a big riser on there because that's a player that a lot of teams are interested in. surely the Jets don't want to part with him, but sometimes if you want to get what you want, you make that, you have to make a move like that. So, yeah, to answer the second part of your question, Dave, I think absolutely the Jets are going to be in play to get something. I think everyone who has observed this team all season long would suggest that they're good. They're very good. They're a first-place team, but there's something missing with this team, and I think that's at veteran experience up front. I think they're a very young team in a lot of ways. One of the youngest teams in the league, and with certain lineups, they are the youngest team in the league. But so you need to make some kind of a move to get a veteran center, a puck move, you know, a distributor like a Stastny would be very helpful. They also would consider a winger. It's, you know, it's a situation where they can just get better and add to their top six. And I think that they're going to try for sure. And I wouldn't be surprised to see some kind of a move that brings in a defenseman, whether it be a guy that can play in the top four or another depth guy, like when they brought in Joe Morrow last year. Just some experience and some guys you can rely on if you need them.
Ted Wyman is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN Radio 1290. Teddy, after the road trip, or as part of the road trip, you wrote in your column or your article for the Winnipeg Sun that it looked like Patrick Laine needed a seat in the press box as the kind of wake-up necessary to get him going after, I mean, his struggles have been well-documented as of late. After Thursday night's game against the Blue Jackets, do you still stand by that opinion? And could you foresee any scenario where that actually happens?
Yeah, first off, I don't really think it's going to happen. Because when you talk to Paul Maurice, it doesn't sound like it's going to happen. But I also said something. He needs something to jolt him awake. It could be an entire game on the fourth line. It could be a seat in the press box. There's lots of things I think that could be done, because he doesn't seem, like, he is not generating. He's not driving. Nobody on that line is driving. So if you look at the numbers, guys, they're averaging the last little while 30% percentage or 30% possession in each of their games. But Patrick Laine was 5-on-5, 25% the last game. And that was not even the game where he had zero anything. This time he actually did have some shot attempts and some chances, but 5-on-5, they were hemmed in their zone all night long. So it's not just him, it's everybody on that line, no question, but you need a guy like that to be a driver sometimes, and he's got to figure out how to make himself better in order to get into the positions to have chances to shoot the puck and score. Because it's not just going to come to him. You can't just go and get into the spot that you're comfortable with and think that the puck's going to come to you and you're going to get that goal. I really, obviously, like Patrick Laine. I think he's a very good hockey player. I think he's got an elite shot that you just don't give up on. They absolutely should have patience with him. But that doesn't mean that you can't let him know that it's just not working right now.
Teddy, yesterday Coach Paul Maurice mentioned that he was still thinking about his starting goaltender for tonight's game against the Anaheim Ducks. I think everyone has a certain expectation that, you know, it might be Lauren Brossoit, just based on the fact that
it's Connor Hellebuck. It's Connor Hellebuck this morning. It's going to be in net tonight.
Was it just announced?
Yeah.
Well, I guess, you know, that takes away the first part of my question, Drew. But Teddy, when you're talking about the usage of Lauren Brossoit, so Hellebuck is obviously, you know, Drew. Good thing Drew's here to make me look good. He's been doing that for 10 years.
Yeah.
If Lauren Brossoit's not getting the start tonight, I guess the thinking would be that he's going to get the start Tuesday against San Jose. But in your opinion, is this the point in the season where you start to see Lauren Brossoit get a higher percentage of the starts in goal?
Yeah, I think so. That's why I kind of expected him to start today too. But I'm pretty sure he'll start one game next week. They play four more games next week. I don't think there's any way that Connor Hellebuck plays all four of them. There's a back-to-back next weekend as well. So the odds are he'll be in one of those games. So, but Paul Maurice even said it right out of the break that he expects him to get a higher percentage of the games in the final 34 than he did in the games leading into the bye week, just because of the schedule. It's 34 games in 69 days coming out of the break. That's a really tight schedule. You're basically playing every second night. There's quite a few back-to-backs. You have to make sure that you use both your goalies, and they're in a good situation because both their goalies have played pretty well, especially lately for Hellebuck. and for Brossoit all season. So that being said, when Connor Hellebuyck is playing as well as he is right now, and the Jets are doing as well as they have been the last couple of games, no need to change it up. He's had a day off, and Hellebuyck is going to be in that situation once the playoffs roll around, that he needs to go every second night, and that's kind of one of the rhythm that you want to get him into.
Teddy, are we finally seeing a fourth line that Paul Maurice is starting to trust now, especially now that they're starting to contribute?
Oh, I think so, for sure. In the Boston game, they were out there late, quite a few times actually against the Nashville Predators as well, out there late. That's a sign that he definitely has a lot more trust in them. They don't have the greatest possession numbers either, but of course, that's something that maybe isn't the biggest factor right now with them, because they certainly are, in the minutes that they have, they are generating chances and they're getting goals. Mason Appleton, I think he could shoot that shot about 100 times and he would only score once on Bobrovsky the other day, but nonetheless, he gets a goal. He's had a few lately. Brendan Lemieux's been scoring a lot. Andrew Kopp kind of brings some veteran presence to that line and a real solid center. So I think Paul Maurice really likes it. Could I see it being upgraded? If they do acquire a top six forward, it's going to have a whole different look going forward. But obviously, it's doing quite well right now. And you have to like the way that some of these guys have come along as the season has gone along. I think Brendan Lemieux has clearly proved that he's ready to be an NHL player. And Mason Appleton, although my guess is he would be the odd man out if they do acquire a forward, has looked pretty good as well.
Ted Wyman covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Sun. Ted, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Always a pleasure, guys. Enjoy the 10th anniversary show.
And thanks. Ted, we'll send you a piece of cake in the mail.
that sounds wonderful.
Thanks, Teddy.
Bye-bye.
When we come back, we give you an update from the Winnipeg Jets game day skate. We tell you who's in the lineup. We tell you who's maybe out of the lineup, as one key member of the Jets left the skate a little bit early.
You couldn't have told me that Hellebuyck was starting before I asked that question.
You have Twitter in front of you. What are you doing on your computer?
I'm present. We're on the radio. I don't like to distract myself with Twitter.
You were showing Dave pictures of your daughter.
That's a fair point.
You're listening.
I'm not supposed to mention that on air.
You're listening to
making me look bad.
You make yourself look bad sometimes there, big boy. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The key for Patrick Laine is to be able to get into that inside position. 59% or just about 59% of all goals in the league are scored in that prime scoring area. That's where he's got to go to, and that's where he's got to attack to. When he is, he had some really good chances. When he doesn't, he can say, I'm getting the shots, but they're not the dangerous kind. And process matters here. He needs to get inside.
TSN Director of Scouting Craig Button breaking down portions of Patrick Laine's game from Thursday night against the Blue Jackets. He was better on Thursday than he had been on Monday and Tuesday, but what is ailing Patrick Laine is a question that is being bandied about Winnipeg in all sorts of different conversations. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, celebrating 10 years on radio. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290. And this segment of the show is brought to you by one of our long-term sponsors, Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the whole family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. You know, the Patrick Laine question, as I mentioned, is one that is significant. The Jets need to get him going to really be as big of a threat as they need to be come playoff time. And now is the time to change things around. Now is the time to experiment, to get a struggling young player going, to get him active, to get him feeling good about himself. Let me ask you guys this question. Why shouldn't the Jets make the switch of Kyle Connor and Patrick Laine? Why doesn't Patrick Laine go play with Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele, because we've seen historically that Scheifele and Wheeler can almost get any player going. So why not try that threesome together?
Right, and I think you might see it here, guys, at some point coming up from here until the rest of the end of the season. And, you know, speaking of Lion A, and we know that he's only got one goal in his last 13 games. He's got, what, one assist in his last six games. He's really struggling. But I did think that there were signs in that game against Columbus, guys, that would tell you that he is about to snap out of his goal-scoring slump. Now, I'm not saying that he's going to score a hat-trick tonight against the Ducks. Wouldn't shock me. But you're starting to see, I think, a more aggressive Lion A, a more engaged Lion A. And, you know, Mike Kelly of thepointhockey.com, if you haven't checked out that website, it's a great website. And I know that Dave linked it on illegalcurve.com, and they had Mike on Afternoon Ride. We've had Mike on the show many times before. And he talks about inner slot shots. Mm-hmm. And he talks about the percentage of 5-on-5 goals that come from forwards in the inner slot. It's almost 60%, 59%. And he talks about how Lion A is not shooting the puck from that inner slot. I mean, that you're talking about between the faceoff circles, right in front of the net, that area. You guys know what the inner slot is. And even though Lion A doesn't score a lot of his goals from that inner slot area, he scores it from the high slot area, you know, at the top of the circle, closer to the boards. In November, he had 8 inner slot shots, and he scored 5 goals, whereas October, December, and January combined, he had 4 inner slot shots, and he only had 1 goal.
He's not getting to the that's the dirty area.
Sure, if you want to call it, but it's not the I know. It's scoring area.
Yeah, scoring area. He's not getting to the scoring area.
Dirty
same
area
thing Craig
is,
Button referenced in
right.
in the clip coming out of break.
Right, and Mike Kelly just broke it down more in a statistical way, and to me, it's the inner slot shots, and sure. just in general, Lion A needs to shoot the puck more. As far as I'm concerned, Dave, when Lion A is the most successful, he's shooting the puck and getting 4, 5, 6 shots a game, as opposed to the 0 or 1 or 2 that we've seen, you know, over the last, let's say, 6 or 7 or more games. So I think Lion A is going to snap out of this slump. I realize that it seems like it's been going on forever. It wasn't that long ago that he scored 18 goals in the month of November. So I think there are signs that he's starting to play better. He's more engaged, and especially on the power play. The power play, regardless of what you want to say, that is Lion A's bread and butter.
Dave, why not make the switch? I know Connor and Scheifele and Wheeler are succeeding in terms of they're getting goals, and we saw it on Tuesday in Boston. We saw it Thursday against the Blue Jackets. Kyle Connor playing with Wheeler and Scheifele is a threat. Don't the Jets need to do it to give Lion A that opportunity to become a threat again, playing with their two best forwards? Isn't it just incumbent on Paul Maurice to almost make that switch to get a struggling player going? Because, you know, just doing the same thing over and over and over again hasn't resulted in
well, that's
in
a, any that's a good question, though. Why hasn't he done it yet?
I mean, to me, maybe it's a function of I would suspect if, you know, without having knowing the inner workings of what's going on in the Jets room, I would think that Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler like Kyle Connor's game, thinks that his game is more suitable to theirs because of the fact that he is a fast player and can play that fast game with them. Whereas Patrick Laine, I'm not saying he's slow, but he's not doesn't have the same speed as Kyle Connor. So to me, if it was me, I mean, first of all, I think you'd have to put a guy like Matthew Perreault on a line with him, because I think Matthew Perreault brings out the best in anybody he plays with. So I think if you go Perreault with Lion A and Little, then at least you're going to be – we saw it briefly. He did it briefly, I think, in the third period of the Boston game. But the fact of the matter is that I think Matty Perreault would be a player, because if you're not willing to put him onto that first line, like I agree with you, Drew. I like the idea of putting him with Wheeler, Scheifele, giving him that confidence, getting him going again. Then you can switch him back. And by the time you switch him back over the next, you know, week or so, you've got Nikolaj Ehlers coming back. Then you've got a function of maybe
trade deadline acquisition potentially.
Sure, exactly. So to me, I like the idea. I agree with you. I don't know why you wouldn't do it from Paul Maurice's perspective, because – and Paul Maurice talked about it. He was asked.
We saw it, by the way, guys. We saw it very briefly last year.
Very briefly. I mean,
I want to say that it was maybe a game, maybe two games.
We haven't
year.
Seen enough of a sample size of it to say that this is either gold or that this isn't going to work. I tend to think that it should be gold because, you know, I don't know that Kyle Connor is. Kyle Connor, I don't think, is a more talented goal scorer than Patrick Laine is. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to make that argument.
It's pretty close.
Well, right now he's playing very well. But put Laine there with your two best forwards and see what comes of it. I mean, the Connor, Scheifele, and Wheeler line is succeeding and they're scoring goals, but they're not a huge possession driver. I think they're under 50% or right at 50% Corsi 4. So it's not like this is a dominant line that can't ever be broken up. They're a line that is succeeding with, you know, average possession. I want to see what the possession numbers and the success is of Line A with Scheifele and Wheeler. Maybe that is a dominant line.
Well, Line A's not a possession driver either, though.
I know he's not, but maybe, you know, so but Connor isn't either with those guys, so maybe things change and you get, you know, you get Line A going as a result.
I think to your point, Drew, I don't think, I agree with Ezzy. I don't know that possession necessarily is going to change with Patrick Laine. You know, guys like Nikolai Ehlers, Matthew Perreault, those are possession guys.
But if you're, sorry to interrupt you, Dave, if you're going to put Laine on the top line and you're going to see what that line can do for the next couple of weeks and Ehlers comes back, then that means Ehlers is going to have to go to the right side because Connor hasn't played the right side. Ehlers has.
Yeah.
So is that what you're suggesting? Then you would go Connor on the left side, Little in the middle, Ehlers on the right?
I think it's time to try other things just to get Line A going. You can't continue to put him
out. He's been on every single line so far except the first line.
Put him on the first line.
No, I agree with you, Drew.
See if that plugs him in.
We talked about this on the Wednesday show.
I know.
I mean, I can't give you the answer because Paul Maurice seems to be hesitant in doing that.
Right.
Right? And I honestly, the only thing that I can think of, guys, is Mark Scheifele is a playmaker, but he's also a shooter. Mark Scheifele likes to shoot the puck. What does Laine like to do? He likes to shoot the puck. So, yeah. I mean, the only thing I can think of is that, you know, Wheeler is going to defer maybe too much to Scheifele, and then you're not really going to fully utilize Laine. I mean, I'm just trying to think why he doesn't think Laine would fit specifically with Scheifele as opposed to Wheeler. Because Scheifele is obviously a great centerman, a top 10 centerman in the league. He has to have a reason, and I do think you're going to see it, though. I wouldn't be surprised if you see it.
Well, that's something to get Patrick Laine going, some food for thought. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by the Deputy Commissioner of the NHL, Bill Daly. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're celebrating 10 years as part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Ducks, 6 p.m. tonight on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program the Deputy Commissioner of the National Hockey League, Bill Daly, joins us on the line now. Bill, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, guys.
Bill, obviously we appreciate your time on this Saturday morning. Thank you for agreeing to join us. We have to start with what I'm sure you're getting on more often than not on every interview that you do, which is the elephant in every NHL conversation, the potential reopening of the collective bargaining agreement. Right now, both the NHL and the NHLPA are saying all the right things. They're saying all the positive things, but there's an old adage I'm sure you're aware of: fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. Why should hockey fans have confidence that there won't be a work stoppage when this CBA expires?
Well, I mean, I'll start with the fact that we literally have 3.5 years left in our collective agreement. You mentioned the reopener. Obviously, in September, we each have the option to reopen the current agreement effective. It essentially would be effective September of 2020. So, at minimum next year and a half, we're under agreement. We have labor peace. If we go by the term of the agreement, it's 3.5 years. The parties, I think, are aligned in wanting to explore whether we can do something earlier that would actually extend it beyond 3.5 years. So, there are a lot of options and lots of time, and I think our discussions to this point in time would suggest we're similarly motivated, if nothing else.
Bill, where are the 2022 China Winter Olympics on the NHL's radar? Obviously, you know, that's a long time away. It's 3 years away. But, you know, where does that factor in with yourself and Gary Bettman? And how important is being in the Olympics for the NHL when you talk about growing the game in that part of the world?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, our position's been made pretty clear by the commissioner on repeated occasions as to kind of the limited advantages that we have gotten from Olympic participation. I do think it's changed over time. I think when we first shut down the league to go to Nagano in 1998, which was the first full Olympic participation we made, you know, the sport and the game and the profile of the game was in a different place. And obviously we're in a much better place now. We have a much broader profile. You know, I think, you know, the participation in the Olympics in the early years, there's always pros and cons. I think probably on balance made sense. You know, by contrast, I'm not sure we missed anything, by not being in South Korea last February. And, you know, in fact, for our owners, we probably were in a much better place than we otherwise would have been by not going. So, you know, having said that, I understand that the players, you know, the overwhelming majority of the players think Olympic participation is important. I suspect that will be one of the issues that we discuss as we continue our discussions on potential extension of the CBA. They know what our position is on it. We obviously know what their position is on it, and we'll see where it goes.
You know, Bill, the Jets and the Panthers went to Finland this year, and previous years have seen games played in Sweden and Germany. Obviously, right now the focus is on expansion to Seattle, but if the NHL were to ever consider a European expansion, what would need to change from today's world to make that a reality?
It's a good question, and it's one you might imagine we get a lot. I continue to believe that expansion for us into Europe would have to be a multi-team expansion, which makes it a little bit more difficult. I mean, we're not like the NFL where we only play a game a week. And theoretically, they could stick a club in London and not have any issues. We would have to have some minimum number of teams that we could locate over there. I think, you know, historically the issues pointed to have been travel. I don't think travel would be the biggest issue if we got a group of teams that we put over there. But facility availability, you know, the arenas aren't the same in Europe as they are in North America and would have to be really kind of North Americanized, for lack of a better term, which costs a lot of money. And the market economies and what people pay to watch hockey over there is a lot different than what it is here. So those are obstacles in the short term, I would think. But, you know, the world continues to evolve. Hockey continues to be more popular wherever it's played. And so, you know, I'd never say never.
Deputy Commissioner of the NHL, Bill Daly, is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets game day here on TSN Radio 1290. Bill, in your previous answer, you mentioned how Olympic participation is important to players, and it quite possibly can be a key bargaining position for them in CBA discussions. We know that escrow is a key issue for them as well. From the NHL perspective, from an owner's perspective, what are the key issues that you think you would want to see addressed or resolved in a new collective bargaining agreement with the players?
You know, I don't want to get too specific. Obviously, we've, you know, given the process we're engaged in, we've started to drill down a little bit. There are obviously things that in a perfect world we would want the CBA to kind of read differently, and whether it be, you know, contract length, some of the bonuses we've seen under the current agreement. Probably not consistent with the spirit of the system. So there are some cleanup areas, certainly, but I would say overall, I think our owners are pretty satisfied with how this collective agreement has worked.
Bill, we wanted to ask you about the length of the season. Anytime you bring up the length of the of course, it's 82 games, as you know, and anytime you bring up shortening the season, people say, you know, you're crazy and the owners won't go for that. But if the NHLPA did come to the NHL and said, we want to lessen the schedule by whatever it is, 10% or 15%, and we will roll back our salaries by a smaller percentage. I mean, first question is, you know, is this a crazy idea? Will this ever happen? And would the NHL and the owners, do you think, even consider that?
It's not something I would, in all candidness, it's not something I would suggest has really ever been considered or recently considered. A change like that really wouldn't involve a formal rollback. It would, you know, the players are get a percentage of our revenues, and the revenues would be less.
Right.
Playing less games, so technically it would fit perfectly within the course of the system. But I don't think there's a strong consensus to really even look at that. I think people are generally comfortable with an 82-game season. You always have logistical issues associated with, changing that as well. So I don't think it's a burning issue. If it was brought to the table, would it be something that we discuss and consider? Of course. But I don't see it on the horizon.
You know, Bill, one thing I noticed if you're looking at the NHL standings right now is that there's a fair amount of parity, and really there's a number of teams that can make the playoffs, and, you know, right up until the trade deadline and possibly obviously up until the playoffs, you're going to have a number of teams that are in it. So it makes it a little more exciting for fans, you know, in a number of different cities that their teams are still in it till, you know, a certain point in the season. But, you know, often you hear the talk of a three-point game. Is that something the NHL would consider?
What are you asking?
Awarding 3 points for a win in regulation.
Yeah.
So it's something that's been talked about, sure. Something been considered and raised for discussion at general managers' meetings in the past. I can't say it's ever progressed to a competition committee. It's nothing we've heard from the players or the players' association. It's something that if there was a need or a perceived need, it's something we'd explore. I think there's a general, you know, pretty high level of satisfaction with how the current point system works and how competitive our teams are. So again, it's one of those things, if it's not broken, don't fix it. I think that's the general consensus right now.
Bill Daly, Deputy Commissioner of the NHL, is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Sort of along the same lines to the previous question about points and standings and things of that nature, the NHL is unique in that the top teams in the league can meet earlier in the playoffs than in any other league. We don't see, you know, the top two teams, in the NFL or in the NBA play before the conference championships. Why does this make sense? Last year we saw the Jets and the Predators, the top two teams at the end of the regular season, play in the second round. Why does it make sense for the NHL to have their top teams playing earlier in the playoffs than all the other leagues?
Well, I'm not sure I necessarily buy that premise that all the other leagues have a different playoff system. I could argue that point if I wanted to. I don't need to. I think at the end of the day, it was the will of our general managers and the board at the time to go back toward divisional playoffs, building divisional rivalries during the course of the regular season, with more games played in division, and then kind of using at least a semi-divisional format early in the playoffs would be a good thing. And I think for the most part, there's a level of satisfaction with how that's played out, even though, as you point out, we've certainly had years where the first and second teams played in the second round of the playoffs. So again, not something that is a burning issue, at least in the ownership ranks right now, but something, of course, we continue to monitor year to year and make sure it's doing what it's supposed to do. It has produced incredible matchups for us in the first two rounds, which helps ratings. We don't have an attendance issue at all in the playoffs, so I can't say it drives attendance, but it certainly has driven ratings for us in its years of operation. So from that perspective, it's been a positive.
Bill, the NHL has committed to puck and player tracking technology. We saw that recently at the All-Star Game in San Jose. Does the NHL have any concern, though, that maybe the average or casual fan is being swept away a little bit by the technological revolution? And the reason why I ask that is because, you know, people like us, broadcasters, and obviously television networks, and, you know, the analysts and all of that, love all of the advanced stats and the puck tracking technology. But you think sometimes maybe the casual fan is maybe a little bit overwhelmed by that?
Well, I think it's a good point, and it's a fair question. And certainly, we don't want to do anything that will get in the way of how our most ardent and passionate fans consume the game. So I think as we continue to kind of integrate the new technology, we have to do it in a way that fans who have consumed the game one way and want to continue to consume it the same way have that option to do. And I think that's how you'll see this roll out. So it's really meant to be an enhancement for people who want the enhancement. But it's not something we want to shove down the throats of our passionate fans who want to watch the game they want to watch. So, the key to that is in how we roll it out, and we'll see how that works next year. But the point's a good one.
Bill, I have to ask you about the Las Vegas franchise. I mean, just reflecting now upon them, now that they've been in the league for a year and a bit, just how happy is the NHL with how that franchise has evolved and how embraced they've become in Vegas?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing story, really from start to present. I hadn't been able to attend the game in Las Vegas after the Stanley Cup final until just this past month in January, and I was curious as to see whether there was still a buzz around the team, whether the community was still in love with the team, whether there was a lot of emotion and atmosphere in that building, and I wasn't disappointed at all. It's very clear that they've done all the right things in that community. The team is the buzz of the town. It's really the talk of the town. You hear about them in taxi cabs from people who probably never even seen a hockey game, but they feel ownership over this team, and they feel it's as they say, Vegas born. And so, you know, the emotion and passion around this team is really something that's pretty amazing to see.
Final question for you, Bill, and we appreciate your time on this Saturday morning. Cannabis now being legal in Canada and in many states in the U.S., you know, why doesn't the NHL remove cannabis from the list of items that it drug tests for? We know that, you know, when a player tests positive for cannabis, it doesn't lead to a suspension immediately. So why not remove it from the list of items it tests for altogether?
Well, I mean, is that a possibility at some point in time? It's possible that it's a possibility. I think our drug program doctors continue to think that cannabis can be a drug of abuse and be problematic and pose problems to the health and safety of our players. That would be the primary reason it hasn't been removed. Those lists are prohibited lists, and the list of substances we test for gets looked at and reviewed every off season and updated. So again, I'm not closing the doors on that being a possibility long term, but I can tell you that as a substance and a potential substance of abuse, it still causes concerns for our medical professionals.
Bill Daly is the Deputy Commissioner of the NHL. Bill, last time you were on this program, we were talking about the viability of the Atlanta Thrashers franchise and whether or not it was long-term in Atlanta. We obviously know the answer to that, so it's much nicer having you on here to talk about the actual NHL and the day-to-day operations of the league. So thanks very much for joining us this morning.
I really appreciate you having me, guys. Have a good weekend.
You too, Bill. Thanks again. When we come back, we're going to discuss the trade that occurred earlier this week between the Penguins and the Panthers. Much more to come. Update from Jets practice as well. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our 10-year anniversary show as part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets Game Day on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
So not only does this help them now, but with 2 years left on Nick Bjugstad's contract, it can help them into the future. Derek Brassard simply did not work out for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Time will tell if this turns out to be a perfect fit. It certainly looks like the ideal one.
Monday started with a big trade between the Kings and the Leafs. Friday bookended the week with a big trade between the Panthers and the Penguins. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, celebrating 10 years on radio this morning as part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Ducks later on, 6 p.m. tonight, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by another one of those long-term Illegal Curve sponsors, Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
All right, boys, it's time for a little IC trivia.
Okay.
By the way, is producer James okay?
That's Dave coughing. That's not James. That's Dave over there on your immediate left, not James across the table, which is very concerning. Dave might not be okay, though. Dave might be...
Dave's hitting that cough button over there.
Yeah.
It's a mic mute.
It's a mic mute is what that's going for.
Okay, so IC trivia.
Okay.
Who was our first ever caller?
Our first ever caller?
First ever caller on Kick FM.
We don't ever take calls very often. So
our very first show on Kick FM, we took a caller.
I don't know.
Dave Shore.
Okay. Good trivia.
Shout out to Dave Shore, of course. Good friend, former classmate at Red River College Creative Communications Program. So first ever caller. Got to give Dave Shore a shout out. Okay. This is IC history here, Drew.
Clearly it is.
You hung out with Dave in Kentucky.
I didn't, in fact. He's still mad at me for not hanging out with him in Kentucky. Let's talk about the trade.
Let's do it.
As I mentioned, it was a pretty sizable deal. It happened early yesterday. Derek Brassard and Riley Sheahan go from Pittsburgh to the Florida Panthers. Also alongside them are a 2019 second-round pick and two 2019 fourth-round picks. Going to Pittsburgh is Nick Bjugstad and Jared McCann. Ezzy, I like this trade from both teams' perspectives.
Yep.
The Florida Panthers aren't going anywhere this year. They've been a perennially disappointing team.
Yep.
Something needed to be done to shake up some members of that core. So they acquire Brassard and Sheahan, both of whom are unrestricted free agents at season's end. I would expect both of them to potentially be traded again before the deadline. They also get
or at the very least one of them.
One or two of them. Yeah. I mean,
let's put it this way. Brassard will not be wearing a Panthers uniform by the trade deadline.
I'd be shocked if he still was. Oh. I'm not sure what the point would be of holding
on
to
him. Are we putting that on the board?
Yeah,
it's a bold prediction right there.
I'm making the prediction. I do not think...
I agree with you, Dave.
It's not bold anymore then.
for their troubles, they also get a second-round pick and two fourth-round picks, and they clear a fair bit of cap space.
Right. This is a trade for the future and specifically future trades.
Yes.
And let's get, you know, it out of the way right now. I mean, there is the rumor out there that Artemi Panarin might be going to Florida.
Yes.
Via trade, or maybe in the off season he might just sign as a UFA. But, you know, you mentioned, Drew, that you like this trade for both teams. I actually like this trade more for Florida. You know, you look, first of all, how often do we see a four player trade, couldn't say that properly, four first round picks?
Four former first round picks.
Yeah.
Well, they're technically always first round picks.
Obviously, we're not at the draft right now, Drew.
Right. I mean, you don't often see it.
Four former first round picks.
Yeah.
Derek Brassard, I think he was sixth overall, if I'm not mistaken.
With the Blue Jackets.
Yeah, he was drafted by the Blue Jackets.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're talking about Shane, who was drafted by the Red Wings, and Jared McCann was drafted. Actually, all three of these players were not drafted by the team that they were traded by. Because Jared McCann was a Canucks draft pick that was traded for, if you remember, Eric Goodbranson.
Yes, I do remember that.
Remember, there's draft picks involved. But when I look at the players that went the other way, I mean, are Jared McCann and Nick Bjugstad that much of an upgrade over Derek Brassard and Riley Sheahan? I mean, I think the key piece to this trade is Jared McCann, because he's in his early 20s. I mean, this is a guy that I think has had his best year of his career. I mean, it's a young career. He's only played, you know, what, a couple hundred games in the NHL. So when you're talking about, you know, this trade for the Pittsburgh Penguins, logically you look at it and you say, okay, now we can go Crosby on the first line up the middle, mm-hmm. Malkin on the second line, and Nick Bjugstad as your third line center, right?
Yes.
Bukestad can play wing. We should mention that. He has played wing for the Panthers. But you expect him to be that big third line center.
Yeah.
And then you expect a guy like Jared McCann to maybe be on your fourth line.
I would think
But I think you could see McCann on the third line as well. And then you have potentially Bukestad moving over to the wing. But it gives the Pens options. So I think that the Pens get better now.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about the Panthers, they shed all of that contract, you know, a year from now, 2 years from now, and then they can go big game hunting and go after a guy like Panarin.
They shed salary, which is important to them. They change the mix in the roster because that obviously hasn't been working. If you're Pittsburgh, you get some cost certainty now in going forward because you didn't know who Pittsburgh's third line center was going to be next season because Brassard obviously wasn't going to be back in Pittsburgh as a pending unrestricted free agent. So instead, the Penguins get Nick Bukestad, who's going to make $4.1 million for the next two seasons. And if he sort of recaptures some of the talent that he has, this is a guy who's had some injury problems and been, you know, in and out of the Panthers lineup because of those injuries.
He's had a lot of injury problems.
Right. If all of a sudden he's only 26 years old, you're buying low on both Bukestad and McCann. And as you mentioned, they're both former first-round picks. So you get younger, you get maybe guys who might fit in with your team a little bit better, and you get cost certainty. So I like it from both sides. It's one of those logical trades from both sides, especially if, you know, Dale Tallon in Florida can then go and flip Brassard. Now you're probably not getting a first round pick for him like you did last year because he's been struggling for, well, really the last, you know, year plus. But are you getting a second round pick for Derek Brassard in the trade? Probably. Are you getting another draft pick for Riley Sheahan? Probably. It makes sense, and then you clear that cap space to go Artemi Panarin hunting, right, if that's what ends up being.
Right, and yeah, and I mean, you look forward to the summer, and you know, could the Panthers be in on Erik Karlsson? Right, it's possible. You hear that Karlsson might want to go to Tampa as well and play with his friend Victor Hedman. But you know, back to the whole you know, Nick Bukestad center and wing. I think this is interesting because Panthers coach Bob Bugner actually had Nick Bukestad on the wing with Jared McCann.
Mm-hmm.
So you wonder if Mike Sullivan is going to put Jared McCann at center on that third line with Nick Bukestad on the wing, because Nick Bukestad is a natural center. He played college hockey and before that, you know, he was a centerman. So You wonder if it's going to be Jared McCann as your third line center, because I know the Panthers are a team that, you know, hasn't been talked about a lot this year, not just by us, but around the league. But, you know, the Panthers really missed Vinny Trocheck.
Sure.
I mean, Trocheck is back in the lineup now, but he's a guy that...
Too little, too late.
Sure. And I mean, you know, I wouldn't count the Panthers out of it just because of what they did last year, but you're going to have to go on a run. Like, you're not going to have to win three games in a row. You're going to have to win eight games in a row to make the
playoffs. 11 points back, and they have five teams between them.
I'm never going to say never.
Stick a fork in them.
I'm going to count the Panthers
out. I'm going to stick a fork in the cake that you brought.
Yes. I know that. That's going to happen very shortly as well, is that you're going to stick a fork in that. But
you also got to wonder if Dale Tallon's thinking offer sheets. I mean, you could always be able to go offer sheet hunting. I mean, if they're clearing up the cap space, I mean, the idea is, and they've got their draft picks, so.
Yeah, we should ask one of the pro scouts of theirs what they're thinking.
I don't think he wants to talk to you about that.
I don't think Rich wants to talk to me, period.
That's true. In fact, I know that. When we come back, Michael Trakos from Post Media is going to join us. He's our good buddy. Wouldn't have a 10-year anniversary show without Michael Trakos. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Birchwood Infinity Nissan. Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.